Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and with me today, somebody you guys all know if you are a podcast fan, especially a bodybuilding podcast fan, Adam McVay. What's up, man?
I wonder how many people hate me that are listening to this right now to see what I have to say.
You like that, though, don't you?
I don't. I'm indifferent to it at this point. I don't really, you know, after everything I've been through and all the little internet tiffs that I've had and everything, it's, you know, I don't know, Turner Riddle was calling me out recently, and it's just like, I read the post, and it's just like, at this point, like, what's the point even, you know what I mean? Like, what, everybody that's involved in this sport that is going to know who I am already does, and they already have their mind made up, so I'm not trying to argue with anybody. The fact of the matter is, and, you know, at this point, it's like, the people that I like me back, and the people that I don't or haven't earned my respect, you know, they don't respect me either. And that's just how the world works, really. I mean, you know, so I'm indifferent to it. I don't care. I get called out on a weekly basis at this point. And I don't even respond anymore. And it's not because I don't see it or because I'm being arrogant and I'm too good to respond or whatever the case may be. It's just like, there's this, like, over this entire journey, and I think you want to get into this kind of stuff, and I hate to use the word journey, that's so cliche, but
there's no other word, right?
Yeah, there really isn't. You're right, there isn't. Now I'm sitting here trying to think of one, but you know, you just I don't know, man. It just seems so pointless to focus negative energy on that. And yeah. I know that a lot of my jokes and posts and stuff seem like they're coming off of negative, but really it's just a thought that I have at the moment. And I try to make it funny, really. And
all right. Well, listen, let's back up for just a second before deep here. So Adam McVay, everybody probably does know who you are, but for anybody who's listening that isn't familiar with the Geared Up podcast, I want to say that it was, to me, one of the most influential bodybuilding podcasts that I've listened to in the last decade. And at least the first 100 or so episodes, you guys knocked it out of the park, just show after show, week after week. These programs, guys, they were like 3 hours long. You guys had multiple guests on each episode, and they were heavy hitters. We're talking, like, you know, Mr. Olympias. We're talking, you know, guys at the top, Evan Sentipani 1 week, and, you know, Sasan Harati the next, and then Jose Raymond. Just week after week, I got to hear from all these guys, and something happened.
My favorites were always like the older guys, like Zane and Yates, yeah, and those guys. Yeah,
those are great, man. And that's those who are, I was those thinking are my of. Favorites. That's who I was thinking of when I said, you know, Mr. Olympian. And I thought that yeah, the Yates show was amazing. But something changed in podcasting because these guys started opening up more, and they started talking about what was really going on in their lives and what was really going on, you know, behind the scenes. It wasn't just like, you know, the Flex magazine cover stuff of this is how many sets and reps we do. Right. We got to learn a lot more, and I definitely think that Geared Up was a huge drive for that. So first of all, man, I want to say thank you for all the amazing podcasts that you've put out.
Yeah, no problem. I think it was just a right place at the right time kind of thing. We already had Palumbo doing a show, and you know, Aaron Singerman was with them, and there was always those guys. They were the major media outlets at the time. Flex Online was another one, along with Muscular Development. And I think that I never claimed to be the first person in bodybuilding doing podcasting.
Sure.
But I was definitely the first person that just did something that was a complete nobody. And I think that it was just the right place at the right time, where the major media outlets were kind of losing power because of social media. And just the combination of me and Johnston together, with me and my outgoing personality, and then Johnston, you know, having his writing background and as intellectual as he is, I think it was just a really good combination. And the fact that both of us really take pride in our work also.
Yeah.
And so we really honed the craft and really got better at it over time. And it was something that we were just pretty passionate about. But at the end of the day, it was just right place at the right time, really. If we wouldn't have been passionate, because how many podcasts have come out and they do 6 episodes and then they fade away, or 10 episodes and they fade away?
Sure.
And I think just the fact that we stuck with it, and we both had a passion for bodybuilding at the time. I mean, I think we still do, but it's just different now that the entire sport has really changed and everything. So, again, right place at the right time, passion for bodybuilding, and the fact that him and I are kind of two headstrong individuals that fucking hate failing, period. So I think just between combination of all those different things allowed us to succeed. And now, I mean, there's a million podcasts in bodybuilding and period. You know, I mean, I think everybody out there probably listens to Joe Rogan every once in a while, if not consistently. And he was another person that was, you know, back in, I want to say 2009. If you go back and listen to his first podcast, it was very, very raw. He had no idea what he's doing. They were just simple hour and a half recordings. He didn't have anybody popular on, and they all just kind of sat around shooting the shit. But look at what it's become today. Is a lot of people get their educational information, whether it be from science or whatever, from his show now. So it just evolved into that. And I think that, you know, with what me and Johnston did, it allowed people like you and VJ to start doing your own thing. And then everybody started realizing, hey, I could do this too. It's really easy. And now it's really easy to get a lot of information. Austin Stout is another one. He's really good. You know, it's really cool. Now, unfortunately, there's a lot of shit out there too, like Tragili and people like that. But, you know, you have to have the good with the bad, I think.
so let's talk a little bit now. When we started up here, you said there's going to be some people that like you and some people that hate you. Mm-hmm. You know what, man? I have a hard time. I can't be you. I can't. I can't be Adam McVay, because I'm not going to go at people. It's not my style. I'm just different than that. But I do, man. I have some respect for you in that you are going to say what's on your mind. And sometimes I almost feel like you're like, I'm just going to have to do this and just suck it up, whatever the outcome is.
That is kind of the part of the mindset that going into it is that, you know, I grew up kind of with a chip on my shoulder in my 20s, and I go out looking for fights and things like that. And so I was never afraid to like take an ass whooping. And so I think that like in bodybuilding, there's a lot of egos involved.
Yeah.
And so because of that, I mean, what's the worst case scenario, man? I've been threatened so many times on the internet. Nobody ever does anything, and nobody's ever come up to my face one time. I remember when the muscular development forums were out, Derek Anthony and I were getting into it constantly.
Oh yeah.
And he's, you know, rest in peace, Derek Anthony. So I just remember I went to the Arnold, and I was nervous going to the Arnold because he's got this whole, he's got this whole history of boxing and all these things that he put out there on the internet. Right. So I'm like, you know, I know I can hold my own in a fight, but I was like, man, I really don't know if I can fight and kick this guy's ass or not, you know, like, but here I am going to the Arnold Classic and he's saying that he's going to fight me at the Arnold Classic.
Oh.
So he was with Gad at the time. And all I get, it's a 6-hour drive, and I'm nervous going out there. I'm like, I'm going to have to fight Derek Anthony.
In front of everybody in bodybuilding.
Yeah. So I took the initiative and I went to the Gap booth with me and just one of my buddies. And I went up to him and I said, hey man, I'm Adam McVay. Oh, Adam, what's up, man? That's just the internet. It's not real. I'm just putting on a show, like building my following and my space and this and that. And I think just something dawned on me at that point that, like, I've never taken the internet very seriously. A lot of people do, and they get really offended by it. The internet's not really reality to me because I have a real life. And just, I don't know, man, it's just, you know, I've never been afraid to take an ass whooping. So if somebody takes offense to something I say and they want to confront me on it, then they're more than welcome to. If I get put in a situation where I have to fight, I will. And I'm not afraid to lose. If I lose, I lose. What's the worst that happens? People talk about that you got your ass kicked for 2 days, and then, you know, nobody even talks about anything that happens with the government for more than 48 hours anymore. They're not going to talk about McVay getting his ass kicked by somebody at an expo for 6 months. You know what I mean? It's going to come and go, just like everything else in today's world. And I don't know. Just nobody's ever really come up to me and really threatened me or you know, said anything. And the worst case scenario is somebody makes a post about me, and then you have everybody I kicked out of the Geared Up group or whatever saying how much of a dickhead I am and whatever. It is what it is.
Right on. So, you know, we were talking about all the different guests that you guys had on, and you mentioned guys like Zane Tell me about what were a couple of the interviews that really felt life-changing to you?
Well, obviously, first and foremost is Dorian Yates, man. I think that we tried to get Dorian on for about three or four months. I had a guy reach out to me and ask if I wanted to interview him because he was launching a new supplement line at the time. And I can't remember if it was before or after he did the Rogan show. But I went back and forth with – I'm emailing back and forth with Dorian Yates over this three-month period, and it kind of got to the point where it seemed like it was never going to happen. Mm. Johnston always wrote our questions for him, and then he would email me the questions over, and I would reword the question so it didn't sound like it was coming off scripted.
Okay.
And it sounded like – it would always be something that sounds like, okay, yeah, that McVeigh would ask that question that way.
Interesting.
So, I don't have Johnson's vernacular. I'm not an idiot or anything. He's just got such a broader vernacular from being a philosophy major and reading as much as he has and everything. So,
yeah.
So he would send me stuff over and I'd be like, okay, man, we can't ask this question in this format because like, it's kind of dorky, really. I mean, it's like, you know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, it's like, okay, it sounds like a nerd wrote this. So I would have to reword it in order to fit my personality. And since I was doing the interviews, it just worked for us. We always did that. So Dorian, man, like when we got, I'll tell you what, I've never been that nervous to interview. And I usually get a little bit of anxiety before I have a guest on, even if they're a total nobody, just because I get these thoughts that go through my head where what if I fuck this up? Or what if, you know, what if sometimes you're just not, you're tired. And so you're looking for words to explain things and you just can't find the words. So you sound like an idiot. Or, you know, we got really good later on after we did a bunch of shows where we would kind of have like an outline of questions or topics that we wanted to talk about, but really we started winging it once we got really good at it.
Okay.
And we fed off of people, kind of like you're doing with me right now, just feeding off people's answers and guiding the interview that way. So Dorian, man, like I remember having the worst anxiety attack to the point where I almost canceled because I was throwing up, man. I was like so nervous. This is my hero, man. Like I got involved, but started following it in 94. I've said that a million times. And like Dorian Yates was on top for the whole first 5 or 6 years that I was following the sport, man. He was like on every magazine cover and every, like he had so much influence. And even though I wasn't practicing bodybuilding at the time, I mean, that's when his Blood and Guts video came out and everything. And just so from a discipline standpoint and everything else, he just always like appealed to me. Just that blue collar, hard worker, keep your mouth shut and just do what you got to do to succeed, whether it be pay your bills or be Mr. Olympia. Right. So I was really nervous about that one. Frank Zane was another really cool one that I liked.
You know what? Hold on a sec, because I would have never guessed that. I remember. So, you know, I was working my blue collar job, listening to every episode of Geared Up. I would look forward, man, when I would refresh my podcast app on my phone.
And you were like a Pepsi delivery driver or something, weren't you?
I was. I'm not going to mention the company name because I don't want to give them any promotion whatsoever at this point. But
I don't think they need your promotion.
right.
As they spend $1 trillion on advertising every year.
This is my small way of pretending I have some sort of power, you know? But I'd look down at my podcast app and I'd be like, the new Geared Up is on. And honestly, man, I'd feel like today's going to be a better day. Like today, and it's Dorian Yates. Dorian motherfucking Yates is going to be up. And honestly, man, I wouldn't have guessed that you were nervous. Like the way, I mean, I could tell you were geeked up and stuff, but I wouldn't have guessed that you were ever nervous. You always came off as very confident and just ready to do what had to be done every show.
Man, that's fake it till you make it, right? In a nutshell. We wanted to, when we interviewed Dorian, we wanted to ask him questions that nobody had ever asked. And even to this day, like I watched the Palumbo video the other day, this four-part thing a lot of those questions are questions that we had already asked him a few years ago before Palumbo couldn't even get an interview with the guy. So it's like, that was really, it was really humbling to listen to that. And just at this point, I feel like we asked him first what everybody is asking him now, except for once you start getting into the ayahuasca and what he's doing with his life, you know, present day.
Sure.
But from a bodybuilding standpoint, I feel like we asked him pretty much all the questions that are still being asked of him to this day. And so like at this point, listening to a Dorian Yates interview for me is like, I think we did a better job.
Nice. Well, that's good. That's got to feel pretty good, you know, several years later now.
It does. Listen, I'm not interested in doing interviews anymore. That we did it for a few years. We did a couple hundred, whatever it is, 160 episodes or whatever. And that whole thing just ran its course. After a while, you get so tired of asking bodybuilders the same thing.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there. Just a second. Because before we do, though, I want to hear a little bit more. Because like I said, I was a longtime listener. I probably listened to some of those shows two or three times, man. And I'm sure you've probably heard that before. But tell me about Zane, because you were just about to start telling me about Frank Zane.
I'm always in that. First of all, like, I grew up in a family where when you went, like, today would be Mother's Day. And so in my family, we would all go to my grandmother's house and the men would sit around the table telling stories. And no matter how many times you heard that story before, you were enamored by that story. So even if Frank Zane was telling us a story that I read in a book or a magazine article or whatever, just the fact that he was telling us that story was just so freaking cool to me. Hmm. So like part of interviewing a guy like Frank Zane, and there was a couple other people too. I can't even think of the names right off the bat. This is just some older guys that we interviewed. I mean, the interviewing John Hansen was really, he was back. He was in attendance in the early 80s and late 70s at the Mr. Olympia contest as a spectator. So it's really cool to get one of the competitors' perspectives at that point, like a Samir Banute that we interviewed. But it's also really cool to just get a fan's perspective of the way this contest went down. Like that's even more cool to me, particularly than it is the competitor, because the competitor doesn't really have an overall broad view of the competition itself. They only have their experience with it.
Right.
Whereas as a fan sitting in the audience, they saw it all go down. They saw Franco Colombo come out with small legs and gyno, and you know what I mean?
Right.
So like to listen to those stories from a fan's perspective of somebody that's looking at the physiques that are on the stage and saying, hey, this person should have won. And then somebody else wins. I mean, to me, that's cool. So like all those old timer interviews, those are all my favorite, just because I've always just loved sitting around listening to old guys tell stories, man. It's just, I don't know. It's just part of me that I really enjoyed.
I hear you. So you started telling me what happened, you know, 150 episodes in or so. You felt like you had heard a lot of the, it started repetitive or what?
It gets repetitive. Yeah. You start to get a good feel for when somebody's telling the truth and when somebody's not.
Really? What do you mean by that?
Well, a lot of times you see, let's say like, let's take a trainer, for example. You'll see, I was getting a, cause obviously I started calling people out. Right. And that's kind of how I made my little name to claim to fame. So people would be sending me programs, and then next thing you know, I'm calling out a coach for they're doing too much of this, and then we'd have the coach on, and the coach would lie, even though I'm literally sitting there looking at the program myself. So then it's like you're kind of start getting skeptical about people's answers, and after a while, I mean, I've always been pretty good at spotting a liar when I find one, and that's kind of where the whole calling people out thing comes from. But a lot of the answers started getting repetitive, and some people were bullshitting, and it just got, I don't know, man, after, I don't know. And I'm not Larry King. I'm not trying to interview people for 60 years, you know, like, I don't want to be propped up in a chair with a pole and interviewing, you know, a Kardashian or something. It's just, it doesn't intrigue me really.
Well, how did it affect your own bodybuilding? Cause like you said, we started out here that you're a fan of the sport and you're a participant of the sport, obviously, man, and I can see it in my own life firsthand, the effect that it has getting to talk to a guy like John Hansen, getting to talk to these people who have done so much with it. It does affect you. It does affect your own bodybuilding. What had it done to you?
I think that, everything that I think about bodybuilding is pre-social media. And so that's when I was a really, really big fan, where you had to buy a guy's DVD, and then you had to actually go to a show or to an expo and meet them there. And they were larger than life because they didn't have all the exposure that they have now. I think that a lot of guys now, I think that they put themselves out there. So like you're seeing progress pictures and three, four times a week sometimes. And I think it's just like there's overexposure to where it's just not a big deal anymore. Not unlike a girl that just posts her ass constantly. I mean, how many girls are in your Instagram feed that normally on an everyday basis, if you didn't see them, but every couple months, you would be like, your jaw would hit the floor. But now at this point, we're just so oversaturated with muscles and training clips and everything else. It's just like, it doesn't excite me the way it used to. I don't even think it's an age thing, man, because I went into the gym today and I trained my ass off in the gym. So my own training hasn't really been affected. Just my fandom has, and so I always I'm always hanging on to like those older. I think that's another reason why I like listening to the older guys, and why I'm always like, you know, bodybuilding was great at this point, and at this point it was really cool because of this. But now it's not that I'm still a fan. I still follow all the shows. I'm still posting pictures constantly of the other guys. But at this point, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of, it isn't what it used to be. And I don't want to sound like the grumpy old man.
Well, you know what I'm seeing here. You know what I'm seeing is I'm seeing that a lot of what I feel like I've been picking up is that, and I've heard you talk about this before too, is that there is no magic, there is no secrets, and that it's the hard work that works. Like, solidified that for me.
I think the number one thing that was solidified for me is that it's all genetics, man. It's genetic response. It's genetic response to drugs, just genetic response. I mean, you can call anybody out for it. I've trained with so many different people in this sport now. Nobody's ever put me through a workout that I couldn't handle myself. And I don't feel like anybody really trains any harder than I do. I mean, you know, it's easy to turn on your phone for a 30-second clip of you doing a drop set on the chest press, but like nobody's doing that for 2 hours straight. You know what I mean? You get up for that one hard set or two hard sets. Everybody does that. We're all doing the same shit. You're eating chicken rice just like I am, just like Phil Heath is.
Yeah.
We're all doing this. We all know the same drugs. We all know the same science behind the stuff. There's a glass ceiling on what you can learn in this sport, really.
Yeah.
And so like we're all doing the same shit. The number one deciding factor is genetics. And I think that once I came to the realization that, wow, there are some people out there that are just dumb as shit, that are just getting by on pure genetics. And here I am doing everything right. I'm timing my supplements. I'm busting my ass in the gym. I'm making sure I get enough sleep. I'm taking more drugs than I'm comfortable with. And I still don't look like fucking 20% of what those people look like. You know, so I think that once I came to the realization that it's all genetic, you can build a great physique over time, 100%. I'm not telling anybody not to chase their dreams or, you know, there's a big thing like with Gary Turner where people thought I was telling him, man, you shouldn't really be trying that hard. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you either have the genetics or you don't. You should realize it pretty quick. You should either have people saying, hey, you got great genetics for this, right? Or you should just be getting the results really fast. And once I came to that realization, then just it gave me a different perspective on bodybuilding. Like, what am I willing to sacrifice? Like, if I take my kids to the zoo, am I willing to bring my cooler around? Or can I just get a couple chicken sandwiches when I'm there? It really changed my perspective on the entire sport. You know, when I set out to be a bodybuilder, this is really fun talking about myself, by the way, because I never get to do this. I don't even know if people know this stuff, but when I decided I was going to be a bodybuilder and I started training for bodybuilding, me and Johnston did that Ironman contest in NPC Ironman in 2008. I just wanted to win the state show, man, because at that point I was training at a gym and there was this guy walking around with a Mr. Illinois belt on, so yeah. He was Mr. Illinois, and it was a big fucking deal then, you know? It's nothing now. But back then, it was a huge deal, and that's the only goal I ever had. I always, like, there was always this thing in the back of my mind. It's like, I cannot be like Jay Cutler. Hmm. As much as I want to be, I just don't have the genetics for it. So I always understood that. And a lot of people just don't know. And so it changed my perspective on the whole, you know, they always say, like, you're trying to fit a square peg through a round hole.
Yeah.
At one point, I was really trying to do that, and I was taking, you know, more, and not even a lot of drugs, but like 1,200 milligrams of test, and sick, you know, more than I should based on my potential. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think we've all been there too.
And of course we have. And so like I was feeling like shit, and I remember taking my dog out and running around with my dog, and I couldn't last 30 seconds running around with the dog. I'm just like power shoving food all the time, and I'm spending all this money on food, and it's just like, what am I doing right now? Like. For what? What's the end goal here? So now, you know, just everything's different now. Next year, my friend Stan, who's 51 years old, he just won a couple Masters overalls this spring. Nice. He wants to do a couple shows with us next year. And so I think I'm going to go to Iowa and do a show. I'm going to go to Indiana and do a show. I'm going to do Wisconsin. I'm going to do Illinois. We're going to do four shows. We're going to do them together.
Nice.
I'm going to be 40 years old and he's going to be 52. So I'm going to try to win the 40 and over. If I do it, great. If I don't, I won't. I don't think anybody 50 and over is going to get in the kind of condition this guy gets in. So I don't see him losing.
Nice.
But the goal is for us to end up in Masters overall together, you know? And so that's kind of where I am now, man. It's a hobby and we're just doing it. I have these small, fun goals instead of these outlandish, unrealistic goals that I had before I started doing all this. You know,
it makes sense, man. I mean, I get it. I totally get it. I mean, I started out like everybody else, and David Johnston's talked about this with me before, where like everybody's got that same story where you had the Sears weight bench in your basement and
yeah, right.
You know, all that too, yeah. Stuff. We all had that stuff. And at one time it did mean something. Like I was recently telling a friend of mine that when I went to Powerhouse Gym and I got a membership and I was getting ready for my first show, they revered the fact that I was competing, and they're like, "Oh wow, you're a competitor. We're going to give you a discount." And they're like,
it was respected to be a bodybuilder at one point, man. You would like, people would look up to you and they would respect the discipline and everything that it takes. But now everybody you meet is a competitor, and they all say, what do they all say? And again, I don't want this to come off as negative, because in my real life, I'm not really like that.
Okay.
Right. So like, but the fact of the matter is you got bikini girls saying they're doing a bodybuilding contest. So now it's so popular to do a bodybuilding show that the actual real bodybuilders don't get anywhere near the amount of clout or respect that they used to, you know, even up to a decade ago.
I hear you. They gave me a free coffee cup when I came to that gym. They gave me a Powerhouse coffee cup. Yeah, they said, and they told me, "Hey, when you do your show, bring in a picture and we will hang it on our wall." Man, you know how that made me feel? That was so cool.
That's cool. I have a few memberships for free here in Chicago because they know who I am, and I'll check in there, and it's good publicity for their gym or whatever, but yeah, man, it's just not the same anymore. And once you do this for a while and you start talking to certain people behind the scenes, and you learn what goes on, and you know, just kind of, I'm not going to say it soils me to it, because I personally, like I said, with my buddy Stan, the goals that we have, I'm more motivated than ever. I went, you know, last night was Saturday night. I got my little cheat meal. I got my pizza. I got a 14-inch deep dish sausage. I devoured that whole thing over a 4-hour period because I have no appetite whatsoever.
No kidding.
Dude, my appetites, part of the reasons why I never got as big as I could is because I just can't eat. I mean, I have no appetite, man. Like I ate two pieces of that pizza, and then an hour later I had another piece and a half. And so it was that kind of thing where I'm like binge watching a TV show on Netflix, and every hour I'm like eating another piece just so I can get the whole damn thing down and get the calories in.
But I guess what I'm saying though is you know, that's where you start, and then things kind of grew out of control, really. You know, goals start getting bigger and you're talking to all these big names. But I think it's great, man. It sounds like you've kind of dialed it back and you've gotten back to your roots, really.
Yeah. So yeah, and that's the thing. And so I'm still people like you and us are still kind of forced to, especially with the group and everything. A lot of people are like, "Oh, Geared Up's not what it used to be." Yeah, well, there's 8,000 members now, and there used to be 1,500. I mean, I can't read every fucking thing that every person says all the time. It's impossible. But yeah, I mean, if I wasn't doing the podcasting and didn't have my sponsors, and they thank God for Joe Binley and Dante Trudell and these guys that still pay me to this day, if I didn't have all of that stuff, I wouldn't be on social media at all at this point. And I would just be eating my protein and training my dick off. And, you know, I mean, I don't even post selfies every few months at this point. Every once in a while, I have on like a brand new Iron Rebel t-shirt, and I'll be like, "Oh man, this fucking fits me so cool."
Right.
And so I'll get a bump in the gym and I'll take a picture in that. Like I haven't posted a picture of my shirt. Of course I have those pictures in my phone of myself in my bathroom mirror, but I don't post them because I just don't need the, I already get enough attention as it is, and half of it's negative and half is positive. And I just don't want any more attention than I already get. Like, I'm telling you, if it wasn't, I wouldn't be on social media at all if I wasn't doing what I do, you know, for the extra income. But I have kids. I can't just be like, "Hey Joe, I'm just going to shut down Geared Up now. I'm not really interested in doing it anymore. And, you know, just keep your money." Like, I can't do that. I don't have that kind of luxury. My kids are in private school and daycare, and it's not cheap.
Well, listen, this takes us to a great place, because I feel like there's a turn in the road ahead. And I think you've talked about this to an extent on the show itself. You've talked about it on social media. I've seen a few posts and comments here and there, but you're thinking about taking things into a new direction with Geared Up. And I understand that this is something that you're probably still, I'm imagining you're still kind of feeling it out and thinking it out and trying to decide, you know, where you want to go. Is this anything that you can talk about?
Yeah. Although I don't know ultimately when it culminates to what it's going to turn into, that it's going to be exactly what I'm saying now.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, so just, you know, we talked about how interviewing people has gotten it's just boring now. I mean, just there's no other word to explain. It's boring. I don't have any interest in hunting people down on social media anymore and trying to set up interviews and everything else. There's plenty of people that are doing that now. And I feel like that whole thing is saturated. I don't feel like I can do anything else as far as maybe, you know, maybe if me and Johnson got back together, if hell froze over, then maybe that's a possibility.
But David, are you listening?
He's already reached out to me and I kind of told him no already. So, but I don't know. Every once in a while I think about it, but there's a whole story behind that that we won't get into.
All right.
Paul Carter comes on. He likes to talk about relationships a lot. And I get a lot of messages from men that I'm trying to word this the right way.
Yeah.
I get a lot of messages from men that appreciate the fact that, and of course, this is all our bodybuilding community people that are listening to this show. It's like these are topics that men don't really talk about, like relationships and love or depression is another one, depression, anxiety that we kind of touched on in one of the Geared Up episodes, but yeah. Nobody really had the expertise to be able to go into it deeper. So that kind of sparked my interest in doing a like more of a men's show where, you know, it's not that I want to be politically correct, but I don't want to be that incorrect where I come off as a douche, but like, but middle-aged men are kind of like, you got, if you're a middle-aged man, particularly a white man, but men in general, like it's not just white men. So I'm not going to sit here and I don't want to sound like a racist is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But like nobody's really focused on us and, you know, me and Paul did some research and then I looked into it further and it's something like 63% of suicides in the United States are men over the age of 30.
No kidding.
And yeah. And it's just like, it's really, it's because as a man, you're taught to just hunker down. And I have this attitude too. I've been unsympathetic, if that's even a word, I don't know, towards people that commit suicide and things like that. But the more you start looking into it, like the more it's like, all right, well, I got to be where I was more empathetic and sympathetic about people, depression and things like that. See, I've always suffered from depression myself, but I notice it in the first day or two that it's happening and I can usually control my thoughts and work my way and manage my way around it to where I'm really only in that hole for a day or two.
Okay.
And then I can pull myself out of it. So of course, like my natural instinct as a male is to be like, dude, I can fucking pull myself out of there. So you need to pull yourself out of there too. And sometimes that's not the case. And as society is kind of switching to this softer, weaker, more, masculinity is becoming an evil thing at this
absolutely.
Point.
Yeah.
I feel like we can, right place at the right time type of thing. And I feel like we need to strike now and kind of have a show that caters towards, and not a Republican show because those exist.
Yeah.
You know, you got your Republican NRA shows over here. You got your male liberal shows over here. Like those podcasts all already exist. This would be more of an all-encompassing middle-aged male. Hey, these are our interests type of thing. It kind of like a branch off of some of the shows that Rogan does, really. And I like, dude, the messages that I get from the bodybuilding stuff are really cool, but they pale in comparison. Like when I start getting messages from people, when we talk about depression and relationships and stuff, like these people, now people are like sharing these very intimate stories with me.
Wow.
And I think that another thing that a lot of people haven't hit, like it's one thing to have a show and invite on an author or an expert in something. It's a one thing to, you know, invite on a doctor that specializes in a particular field. But how about just inviting on some regular fucking people and letting them tell their stories? Because at this point, like, I don't know about you, but when I get down or I'm going through a hard time in life, just talking about not even the way I feel about what's going on, but just telling somebody like, hey, this is going on. It's fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like that makes me feel better. It really does. And everybody's going to be like, oh, McVay's a pussy now.
No,
but it's not. What it is is that I'm just maturing and I'm trying to do my best to evolve as a human and be more compassionate and understanding to other people. But also understand that, you know, I do have a voice, even though I pretend in my real life, I pretend like it doesn't exist. And I totally avoid the fact that anybody even knows who I am. But the fact of the matter is that I do. And Paul does too. And people listen to us and they respect what we have to say. And so that's one direction that I want to go in. The other one, you know,
before you get into that, I wanted to add too. I think, you know, it's not just the middle age. I think that younger guys. I think of myself at 20 years old, and I think about the guidance that I could have used and the guidance that I wanted and the guidance that I didn't get. And part of what I try to do with bodybuilding podcasting is to at least give bodybuilding guidance to myself when I was that age, you know, when I was first learning stuff. And I feel like you could kind of do the same thing for some of the younger guys too. You've been there. You and Paul have, and Paul, by the way, he's great, man. He's really eloquent at talking about that stuff. He's, you know, I'm a big fan of, when I went to school, I took a class for interpersonal communication skills. And I didn't even know what it was. It was a mandatory thing. And I loved it. You know, it was learning about how to communicate and how to talk in a way that people would understand you. Paul's excellent at that. And there's two
different ways to do that. And one of them is the ways that Paul does it, where he is very articulate and explains the way he does. The other way is to be totally transparent the way I am, where I just say what's on my mind and, hey, this is how I feel about it. And a lot of people, I think that people respond to both of those. So I think the combination of the two of us, it's a really good combination, because you got me just being real, and then you got Paul like here, and here's Paul's the, you know, here's all the studies, or here's the book I read on this particular subject. So it's kind of like the Johnston and McVay combo, but just, you know, a different focus, or we're focusing on different aspects of life instead of just bodybuilding.
You know? I will challenge you in one spot, and what's that? I feel like, and now I'm not saying it would be the focus of the show, it would be cool if you guys could get experts in the fields that you were talking about.
Oh, no,
about.
We are. Okay. Paul, like what a lot of people don't know is that Paul goes to all these, like, he's an author. So he goes to these expos and these conferences and these meetings where he knows all these big name people, like all these big time authors. And he knows, you know, the list of people that he knows is ridiculous. He knows The Rock's trainer, you know, like he knows a lot of these people. And so, yeah, we're definitely going to have experts on too. But like, sometimes it's just cool to like have regular people on and let them tell their story. And that's a tricky road to go down, because people, you know, you never know how somebody's personality is going to come off. But at the end of the day, so what? It's just one podcast that, you know, anywhere between 5,000 and 25,000 people are going to listen to, because we're not Joe Rogan. We're not going to get a million listeners in a week.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's, so it's like, what's the pressure? Why not? Why can't I just do whatever the fuck I want? Like, where there's no pressure. There's no money coming in. I don't have CBS telling me what I can and can't say. I'll just do what I want. And then we'll make another episode next time. You know what I mean?
I love that. Yeah, I love that idea right there. I think that's great. And that's the best way, I think, to make podcasts is, and I guess this is a tip for anybody listening who wants to make a podcast, is to just get it out there and then start making the next one, right?
Yeah, you just keep. Yeah, I mean, that's really it. You just keep bumping them out. You learn from the last, or a lot of times you don't even learn from the last. You just adapt as you go along.
Yeah,
you don't even know that it's just like, see, this is where I'm like coming up on 40 years old. So this is like coming into all these realizations. You know, I woke up one day and I realized that I'm going to die someday, and it became real. So now when I have a pain in my chest, now it's like, fuck, geez. I'm not just 22 years old. I got a pain in my chest. I got to go fucking see what's going on, you know, and stuff like that. Like, so right? It's just like you start I have these conversations with like a 25 year old, and I'm just like, when I was young, there would always be the old guys that told you, wait till you get to my age, right? Everybody's always had that. So now as I'm coming up, I'm going to be 40 in a few months. So now I'm coming up, I'm 40 years old, and I'm talking to 25 year olds, and I'm not saying wait till you get my age. But what I am trying to explain to them is that you can't replace experience, and there's just certain places in life where you just wake up and you just evolve that day, and you're just not the person that you were before that. And you can't, no matter what, no matter how many books you read, or no matter how educated you are, or no matter what you think you know, you can't have that until you have it. And the thing with putting out the podcast and just doing the next one, like you said, is a lot of times you're learning what you're doing and you don't even realize that you're learning. This is what I was going to get to, until way later. And you look back at hindsight, and then in hindsight, you're like, wow, I got really good at that. Yeah. How did I get? And then that's when you learn what you did. It's not that you're like, because at the end of the day, we're dealing with other human beings, and you can control an interview in which direction it goes, but you can't control. That's about all you can control. You can't control what their answers are or what questions you're going to ask off their answers. Or that's about all the control that you have. So in life, a lot of times I think you get to a certain point and then you look back and you're like, wow, I really fucked that up. Or, wow, I really did a good job. Okay, so what did I do that was a good job? And then you can look back, hindsight is 20/20, and you can learn from there. And then you can use that lesson that you learned to go forward. But while you're in the lesson itself, I don't think you're learning much.
I can see that. You're just practicing like an instrument or something. And over time, you progress. So what's the other idea you were talking about?
Oh, the other idea is totally unrelated to bodybuilding. I have a friend, his name's Josh, and Josh wants to get into comedy just like me. So he's a pretty well-connected person here in Chicago. He's connected with pretty much all the major sports teams here. And not that it wouldn't be a sports show, but he's very well-connected, and we could probably get some really good guests to come on and just shoot the shit and have fun with them. But it would be a lot more comedy-based, funny type stuff, not so serious.
Okay. Yeah. That would be fun, man. I mean, I know you listen to a lot of the comedy podcasts, and Rogan is a comedian himself. I think I heard you mention this. I like his show more than I like his stand up.
Oh, I don't like his stand up at all. I think it's not that great. But a lot of people do like it. And I gotta admit, man, I don't really listen to podcasts that often. No, I only listen to Rogan when he has on like a scientist, and they're talking about, I don't know, string theory or anything like that, or when he has like a horticulture expert on and they're talking about, you know, psilocybin and psychedelic mushrooms. Like any kind of expert that he has on that I can learn from that's not related to something I already know, like those are the ones that interest me. But when he just has on other comedians and they just say funny shit and, talk about whatever, they stopped drinking for 30 days at one point last year, like that doesn't interest me at all. That's just like, that's a bunch of guys sitting around at a bar just talking, that doesn't interest. I want to learn something. And he has a lot, or like political experts, he has sex experts on, like and I don't mean like sex like intercourse, I mean sex like gender experts, really. Like that stuff really interests me because I'm not really well versed in that stuff, so I'm trying to evolve and become well-rounded, and those are the shows that I listen to. But otherwise, I don't really listen to a lot of podcasts, man.
Right on. How's the comedy idea coming along? Because I know you said all the way back when you were on Bodybuilding Nerds that you had wanted to do stand-up. Right.
So my divorce was final in October, so I've just been trying to like get back off the ground from that standpoint.
How's that gone? If you don't mind me asking, how has that been as far as like evolving as a human being?
Dude, I suck at being an adult, man. I made a post the other day. Like, I spent the last 17 years in three separate relationships.
Okay.
And in each of those relationships, I didn't pay the bills. I paid the bills. I made the money to pay the bills, but I wasn't the actual one sending the money in to pay the bills. I really took for granted cleaning.
I saw this post. I think I saw this.
I took cleaning for granted completely. The apartment I moved into is kind of an older place. It's in an older neighborhood, so there's no dishwasher in here.
Okay.
So I took cleaning for granted, and the fact that, you know, like, I don't know, I would take, you know, we're bodybuilders, we eat a lot of food, so we take these big giant shits, and, you know, shit gets stuck on the toilet bowl. I didn't clean the toilet bowl one time in the last 17 years. Oh. I've lived on my own for a month now. I think I've cleaned it four times already. Like, my idea of cleaning a toilet bowl is the next time I go to the bathroom, not now, but like back in, you know, when I was younger, the idea is to, you take a shit and then you get a little poop stuck on the side of the toilet. So what do? You wait till next time when you go to the bathroom, then you piss on it, right?
That's naturally. That's how you handle it. Another way?
Well, no, but then, yeah, apparently you got to use a brush and soap.
Okay.
Yeah. Just stuff like that. Like, there's a soap for everything. There's a dish soap, a hand soap, a floor soap. Like, I got soap in the shower. I got another hand soap in the bathroom. Like, I had no idea that I just took it for granted that there was like 13 different soaps I had to buy when I go to the store. Just stuff like that. I don't know. Well, paying the bills and just sitting down and writing out a budget and shit like that. Like, nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. I never said I was. And I'm coming up on 40 years old and learning how to write a budget. Yeah, that's really happening. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, though. So, you know, obviously these were probably hard changes to make in your life. And I'm assuming that you are looking for happiness. You're looking for happiness in your own life, and you're trying to be honest with yourself. I have to imagine that these have been some scary times at points.
The worst part is being away from them. Like, you know, going from seeing your kids every day to not seeing them.
I can see that. Yeah.
Every few days. It's really like I live by myself with my dog. I did get to keep my dog in the divorce.
What kind of dog do you have?
She's a pit bull, Gemma. Nice.
Of course, you're a bodybuilder. It's got to be a pit bull, right?
Well, she's not your typical pit bull. If she was a woman, there's no way I would ever date her. She's a stage fight clinger like you've never seen.
So is mine.
She will literally put her face an inch away from my face and just stare at me. Just stare at me, and I will purposely avoid her for 5 minutes, and she won't stop. She will stare she'll stare holes in me until I start paying attention to her.
That's adorable. My dog is my pit bull is the same.
And she's a great companion, and it's really cool. But like when you go from living with your wife and kids and stuff to just living with you and your dog, like a lot of, you know, people always say dogs are better, and dogs are great. But human companionship, you can't replace that with an animal. That's just not a thing you can do. So like having a little, it's cool to play with the dog and they're laying there eating their bone or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not your daughter playing with toys and running up to you. Hey, daddy, look at this. And, it's not the same. So like that, I've had a pretty rough time with that. Not being around my kids as much, but me and my ex are totally cordial, and I can go over there whenever I want and see her. I can go pick her up and bring her over here. It's just that, you're an adult. And so you're stuck in this almost Groundhog's Day type existence where you're waking up and going to work every day. And then, as a trainer, I'm a personal trainer, so I have to be there when the clients, which is after work, 5 to 8-ish. And I got to be there in the morning for the rich ladies that, they go hang out with their trainer and then they go to Starbucks after that. And so I got to be there for all those people. So my days are really long. And at the end of the day, there's just not enough time without losing money to pay for the kids to go see the kids. You know what I mean? So it's like this, it's this vicious, it's this horrible cycle that you get stuck into. And so that's the problem I'm having the most, but paying the bills and everything, I'll figure that out. But
right on. Yeah. That's
I'm almost 40 years old and I'm bitching about paying bills.
Like, it's time to learn. It's time to learn, right?
I know. I can't, it's not that I'm complaining. It's just like, I woke up and I'm like, man, I'm really not used to this. I suck at being an adult.
Yeah.
But in a couple of weeks, everything will be fine. This is so brand new. I've only moved in here for 3 weeks now.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding.
Yeah, it's new.
That's cool, man. That's cool. I definitely wish you luck with that. It's got to be, it's a huge change, but I feel like, I guess what I can express in my own life is that, you gotta stick to what you think is right for you, and try to find your own happiness, right?
Yeah, I guess. I've never been one to sit down and really think about, man, am I happy or not? I've always been just kind of that you wake up, all right, what do I got to do today? All right, I got that stuff done. I got a couple extra hours with my day. What can I do that will make me feel more fulfilled or temporarily fulfilled or whatever? Yeah. You know what I mean? What it's like. So, you go on a date and then you find some chick to stick your dick in or whatever. And everything's good. And then you wake up the next day and you find out what am I going to do today?
Hey, I've got a topic here. We kind of touched on this just at the beginning and I thought it was awesome. I wanted to try to somehow craft a way to work it in. It hasn't happened. So I'm just going to throw it out there. You were talking about steroid dependence.
Oh, yeah. Oh, where should I start that at?
Yeah, because it's a big one, man. And I feel like,
it's getting worse with social media and everybody needing to look good all the time. It really is.
Where do you think this comes from? Do you think that this is a physical dependency, or do you think that this is because, like you just said, we always want to look good and it's a psychological, always looking the best you can type dependency?
Well, at the risk of sounding like an old man, you go back to before the message boards and quote unquote progress pictures online and everything. And Paul Carter actually just wrote an article on this lately about how social media killed the bulk. Right. So everybody's got to have abs now. Everybody's got to stay lean. People are they're more content, I should say, putting on 2 to 4 pounds of muscle a year instead of 7 to 9 pounds of muscle a year, if they get to keep their abs and look good in their selfies. So I think that somewhere along the line, when it went from an off season cycle and a pre-contest cycle and the rest of the year off, where you were, we all seen pictures of Jay Cutler in the off season back in the day, or even Dorian. He was huge and he was relatively hard for how big he was and everything. But he was waterlogged and fluffy. Yeah. He would definitely be called fluffy these days. But so we all saw that, and there was always bodybuilders used to have a true off season where they were pounding the food. They were eating 8-9 meals a day. Some of that food was shit. They were power shoving.
Yeah.
They were doing whatever it took to add the scale weight so that they can diet back down. And that's what bodybuilding was back then. It was eat as much food as possible, lift as heavy as you could and as hard as you could. And then you switch gears and you go on a diet and you start reducing calories from that point. Lee Priest, of course, he's famous for all his pictures and stuff. So I think that somewhere along the line, once body, and the other thing too is they weren't dependent on chemicals. And I say that with caution because obviously we have people that abused chemicals back then as well.
Sure.
And drugs were better then too. I think they were, you know, more dependable on what dosage you're getting of everything. And if you're actually getting the drug that you think you are.
Yeah.
So I think somewhere along the line, as bodybuilding became more chemical dependent, then that's also it just happened to correlate at the same time as when social media came around and it became more and more popular to post your pictures and your training videos. And I think that's where that now blasting and cruising is pretty common, or just staying on a gram of testosterone for a couple of years is very common these days. Like I know there's a lot of people have done that. One of your close friends, I won't say his name, but like I know that he did that for a fact to get his pro card. And so that I think I think that at some point you have to, here's the thing. This is why I wanted to talk about the topic, is that at some point I'm going to have to stop taking steroids, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not huge by any means, but when I walk into a grocery store, people know I lift weights.
Sure. Sure. You're a lot bigger than the average guy. That's, you know, any absolutely. Of us who use gear.
I'm a lot bigger technically than even the guys that lift weights regularly, right?
Sure, like, sure.
I'm 242 pounds at 5'10". That's not small. It's small for us because A, we're demented, and B, we're around these behemoths
right,
all the
right.
time.
We're comparing ourselves to Jordan Peters.
Right, exactly. So a guy like that, like, of course I'm not big. I feel tiny next to him. Or I don't even, I hate saying that. Like, I hate these people say, oh, I'm so fat. Like, dude, shut the fuck up. You have veins in your ass. Like, just because you're 8% body fat instead of 5% body fat doesn't mean you're fucking fat.
Right,
like,
right.
Stop being a woman. That's such a woman mentality. Like, oh, look at this little black dot I got on my face. I got to have it removed. Like, nobody even notices that black dot except you. Just leave it alone, you know? Right. So last week, I'm in Walmart, and this guy comes up to me, and he looked like maybe he had been training for a couple months or something like that. And he asked my opinion on creatine. And that's just like, you never really think about how you look or how you're perceived to everyone around you. But when you have a moment like that, it's like, oh, wow, man, this guy really noticed that I lift weights and he respects my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to bring it all back full circle, I'm not small by any means. And I like being the guy. I'm one of the strongest guys in my gym. I can train even at my age right now, barring as long as I don't have a nagging injury that's holding me back at the time. I can pretty much train just as hard as anybody else. And I like that. And it makes me feel good. Right. So like you get an endorphin rush or dopamine or whatever happens chemically in your brain. But it's no different than becoming, it's not a chemical dependency, but it is a psychological dependency.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of heroin addicts, they are addicted to the drug themselves, but they're also addicted to the action.
The ritual.
So when I'll tell you what, when I was doing coke and stuff a lot, like it was like I got so excited and anxiety. And it was like that rush you got from going to pick up a bag of coke.
Sure.
It wasn't necessarily, because then after you did a few lines, you're like, oh man, I'm doing coke. You start getting depressed again, right? Because you're like, oh fuck, I'm a fucking drug addict. But like while you're going through that process, Joey Diaz talks about it all the time. It was the rush that he would go get to, you know, he'd have to call these numbers and.
Yeah, the anticipation.
The anticipation of doing it. And so it's always funny when I hear people like, if somebody in my real life, they'll be like, get on their first cycle of testosterone and they got to do their first injection. To me, I've done a million injections, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's
it's
Tuesday.
Nothing to me. I don't even think about it. I just stick it right in. I don't care if it doesn't matter what it feels like. It doesn't, it's just nothing. But to them, it's like man, I got to stick a needle in myself. Holy shit. It's the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So eventually, we're all going to have to stop. It's either you die, you keep doing the shit, right? And then it kills you, or which is no different than real drugs, really, if you think about it.
Mm.
Or, you know, you have to come to terms with the fact that I'm going to have to shrink down and be a normal person at some point. And that's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's terrifying to think of. For 2 decades, I've been walking around at least stronger than everybody or as strong.
Right.
And then after I got to a certain point and started and I learned what I was doing, I grew bigger than everybody. So now when I go to a bar, no, I always laugh because you get these guys that are like 6'5", 330 pounds. And I was just talking to somebody this about the other day. It's like, that guy's probably never been in a fight his whole life.
Right.
Because, right. But he walks around like acting like an asshole to people. If you fought him, you could probably kick his ass because he probably has no fighting skills whatsoever because nobody's wanted to fight that guy his whole life because he's bigger than everyone.
Yeah.
So even now when I walk into a bar or what, a daddy-daughter dance at my daughter's school, everybody comes up to me, oh, I'm not going to fuck with you. You're fucking huge. Or you look like you're really strong. How much do you bench? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
It's like an identity thing in a way, you know,
and it becomes the muscles become your identity. And there used to be a book that was written like in the '80s and it was about a guy that built his body up and he sacrificed. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it was like something, a suit. He compared it to building up this suit of armor that kind of padded you. It was like protect you from the outside world. But at some point, you know, we're all going to have to shrink back down to a normal size human and we're going to have to face that outside world. And that's terrifying. It really is terrifying. I started lifting weights for girls personally.
Yeah.
But you're young and you're skinny. I got prepubescent gyno, so I had these nipples that stuck out. And I'm standing at the pool with my arms crossed, and I was like, oh, man, well, what can I do about this? Well, come to find out, bench presses build your chest. So
that's that's my story exactly right there, to a T.
Right. So I thought maybe if I build up my chest that my prepubescent gyno – I don't even know how to say the word prepubescent gyno. But I thought maybe if I built up my chest that would go away. All it did was stick my nipples out further. And next thing you know, I'm wearing nothing but black T-shirts to hide my nipples, right? Because if you wear a light-colored T-shirt, your nipples stick out of it. At this point, I still have it, and I don't even give a fuck anymore.
Well, what it's worth, man, I've seen you in your stage pics and stuff. Never noticed once.
Oh no, because you don't, because it's not like it's different. That's what a lot of people don't understand, that it's not like it's not that hard lump underneath your nipples. It's just fatty tissue. So when your nipples are hard, it's non-existent. You don't see it whatsoever. And obviously, the lower your body fat gets, then there's fatty tissue there, so you lose some of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, like. There is this psychological, even people that aren't even that big, like they go from being on a gram of test down to 400 and that's acceptable to them. The fact of the matter is that's not acceptable. It's not good for your health. And you're just afraid to be normal. That's it. And you're using a drug to cope with insecurity, which is no different than becoming a cokehead and using a drug to self-medicate because your dad raped you when you were a kid or something. You know what I mean? It's the same exact thing. And I think that it's like something that nobody touches on. I think we're seeing, you know, Fockery's got kidney failure now. We got all these people that are getting sick. And that's from years and years of extended drug usage where nobody takes a break and nobody cares about. It's not even that they don't care about their health. You can listen. You can take all the milk thistle in the world if it doesn't matter if you're drinking a handle of vodka a day. Okay.
Right,
like these herbal supplements, yeah, they're great, but they're just a tool and they're not going to trump these powerful ass anabolic drugs that we're taking in the long term.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care how much curcumin you take. If you're doing a gram of test for 4 years, take all the curcumin you want. That gram of test is going to overwhelmingly overpower that curcumin and you're gonna fuck yourself up. There's just no way around it.
So you guys kind of talked about this you did talk about this on Geared Up a few episodes back, and I really like Dave Smith's approach. He said, you know, he is focusing more on his jujitsu and he's gonna continue to try to get better and better at that. He's teaching, and then that way when he does have to size down, he doesn't have to be the guy who used to be big. He can be the guy who's doing something else now. So I guess,
well, that's it. That's easy for Dave to say because he'll beat the shit out of anybody listening to the show right now.
Right.
So at least he focus on. He's like, yeah, when I'm done bodybuilding, I'll just go into fighting. Well, you're already a fucking badass fighter,
right,
so that's a natural progression over.
But I think he's got a great point though. You know, it's finding something else that you can continue doing. I don't know. I have a good friend of my dad. So my dad used to be into lifting when I was a kid, and he had some friends that were pretty big dudes. And there was one guy, his name was John, and John Schmieder. One time John even came over to my house dressed up all in green as the Incredible Hulk. Just like I was like 7 years old, man. It was like the coolest thing.
It's funny now because like that's such a big deal back then. But now who hasn't done that?
Right. But he did that just like just for me, I think. And it was like the coolest thing in the world. I thought I actually met the Incredible Hulk. Like there was no question. But John is, you know, he's like in his 60s now. And he got into running. He does track. And specifically, he does like sprinting. So he does like a 50-yard, 100-yard runs, and he's really into competitive track. But it's something he can do. He doesn't have to be huge. I don't know. I'm just looking for answers here, Ben, because we're all in that same boat.
I've joked about getting into long-distance bike riding, and everybody always makes fun of me, but I'm dead serious. When I'm done training, because you like, how are you going to replace? I'm always going to train in the gym, but eventually I'm not going to be able to do incline presses with 315 for 8 reps anymore, A, because I'm not going to be on the drugs anymore, and B, because of the fact that, you know, I'm going to be getting older and your skeletal system breaks down, your soft tissue, your ligaments and tendons, all that stuff breaks down.
Yeah.
And you can pump, but what's the bodybuilder response to that? Pump yourself full of peptides, right? Just like put some more drugs on it. It's like everybody, remember that? Everybody always makes fun of that skit with Chris Rock. Rub some Tussin on it. You know what? Damn, I broke my heart. Rub some Tussin on it. Shut up, right? That's a bodybuilder response to literally any problem.
Yeah.
Take another drug. Take another drug. And then you got to take 2 drugs for that. And it's just, listen, I've taken shit tons of drugs. I'm not set to, and I'm definitely not telling anybody not to pursue their dreams.
Sure.
But you're onto something when you say you need to have other things that you're interested in, because at this point, nobody's getting rich being a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Like it's not happening. You are so lucky to get a weeder contract back then.
Yeah.
You are even more so lucky now if you got any sort of contract or you're making any type of money. If you're other than coaching, I mean, there's some people making really good money coaching up to a few hundred thousand dollars I know of, but you know, like that's far and few between. It's not the norm, and people you're not getting paid for being famous on social media. All these people with, I don't know, man. I see all these girls with a million followers, and they're not making any money. It's all just a big facade, you know, the whole social media thing. But you're definitely onto something where you get. I was going to say, how do I replace the endorphin rush that I get from going in the gym and doing that?
Yeah, I think there's got to be something physical. There's got to be a physical component to whatever it is. Still,
yeah, and not only that, but if you stop being physical, your body just breaks down, and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
Because that's already going to happen enough naturally. So I shit you not, my ex-wife, her dad goes, he does a couple of races up in Michigan where you guys are from, pretty close. And he does these 100-mile bike rides. Some of them are 150-mile bike rides, and they're very challenging. Some of them go, they span over a 2-day period. But it's not like, you know, they do it for fun. And yes, it is challenging. So you're physically challenging yourself. But when you get done with the race, there's a spaghetti dinner. You have a couple beers with your buddies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you're able to be an adult male in a nice adult male environment. And you also get to challenge yourself physically. And that just appeals to me for some reason. And I've been to Colorado a bunch of times and ridden bikes in Colorado. It's a lot of fun to be up in the mountains riding your bike and seeing nature and being, you know, out there with nature and stuff. So you're right, man. It's like, I look at these guys and it's like, everybody thinks I'm trying to tell people that Turner with his 80%. Oh, if you're in geared up, they only give 80% and there, you got to give 110. That's fine, man. But like, I'm not telling anybody not to give 100%. I'm just saying, like, what else is there to you? You know what I mean? Like, what else do you got going on? If we sit down and have a conversation, like, can you tell me a book that you just read? What kind of TV shows do you watch? What are your binge watching shows? Are they just mindless fucking idiot shows and you're just sitting there eating your chicken and rice and thinking about your next workout?
Now, you know, and I get it. I totally agree with where you're coming from. At the same time, and part of it is like the dogma of bodybuilding, but there is some truth to be the best you can. You've got to give all of it. And that, I guess for some, that means sacrificing. I mean, I've known people that have given like everything. I look at their life and I'm like, wow, this guy really dedicated everything he had. And for a few people, it pays off. I mean, is it the payoff that you want? You turned pro.
Who's at the top of bodybuilding? Phil Heath, Dexter Jackson.
Yeah.
Sean Roden. These guys are not fucking living. These guys are, you watch one of Dexter Jackson's video. He doesn't weigh his steak. He throws half of his eggs away when he's fucking trying to separate the yolks, and yolks are just falling in his egg whites and he doesn't even pick them out. Like, it's all genetics, man. It's all genetics. I'm not telling anybody not to follow their dreams. I'm just telling you, have a more healthy perspective.
Like,
if you're a 5'8" white guy and you got a 38-inch waist, and you're just slamming 10 IUs of human-grade growth and spending all your money, and you haven't had a girlfriend for 6 years, like, dude, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, just wait. Like, you got to wake up. And I'm sorry that I'm like, it's not just me. Meadows is the same way. Porter's doing his whole low dose thing. And people have, yeah, Porter used to abuse shit. And yeah, Porter tells his clients to take more shit than he takes himself. He's catering to what his clients want. Right. I get all that. But like, and we're not like, do whatever the fuck you want. At the end of the day, I don't care. But if I am talking about having a better perspective on life and one person, you know, hears me and they change, then it's worth it to me, as opposed to, I don't know, 1,000 Turner Riddles running around with a 38-inch waist that look like they're pregnant on stage and they're putting Synthol in their quads to even place top 10 at nationals. Mm. It doesn't make sense to me, man. Just, I don't know.
I appreciate your message. I do. I just wanted to play the devil's advocate because I feel like, you know, to be your best, that's what we're told, you know, that's what we're here to believe.
Well, we're Americans too. You gotta have that into factor. Like, where are we from? What society do we live in? We live in a society that doesn't value rest. We live in a society where, you know, we don't really value education. Why? Because we want to create worker bees. We just want mindless people going through their day, producing. In order for that to happen as a whole on a society, you have to instill this mindset of, dude, I appreciate work ethic 100%, but it's all about balance. How many guys do we know? Like, my grandfather worked in a steel mill for 40 years, man. And when he was done, he was just this old, broken down old man that never went on vacation. Mm. And he was just a fucking steel mill worker. And he was an awesome guy. I love him to death. I respect his work ethic. I respect the fact that he took care of everybody in the family and paid the bills and all that stuff. But he never left his fucking town. He got 1 week of vacation a year. He never left his town. He never went to go see anything. There was no relaxation. He wasn't taught that you should have a well-rounded life and that we're all just here for a certain amount of time. And you got to experience Earth and humanity, you know, like that's why we're here. We're not here to work our entire lives. So if you want to be Michael Phelps, then there's only one Michael Phelps. Just keep that in mind. And maybe you will be it. And if you want to spend your life trying to be Michael Phelps, then go ahead. But you don't got really good odds on your side. You know, look at somebody that's like that's a professional. That who is not scraping by to get through their day at this point? Like Evan's not done that well competitively from a placing standpoint, but he does pretty well because he had a smart business sense going into it. I mean, who else is there? There's a lot of these guys are struggling, man. It's like you bust your ass to be the best, and yeah, you look good in your pictures and you get a lot of likes and all this shit, but at the end of the day, how successful is your life really? You know what I mean?
I think it's a question worth asking. And listen, I didn't mention this at the beginning, at least on the show, we talked about it. I didn't have any idea what I wanted to do here today. I just knew I wanted to talk to you, Adam. I just knew that I wanted to do something. And I'm pretty happy with this. I feel like we covered a bunch of stuff and I feel like we, like you said, you don't get to talk about some aspects of yourself. You know, you bring it up and I feel like we get to learn who you are through your perspectives and your opinions, but this has been really cool, man. I feel like we've maybe gotten to see a couple things about Adam McVeigh that we didn't know before.
Awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Are we done? Is that what you're saying? You're kicking me off now?
I'm out of ideas now. That's about it.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah. Do you have any closing thoughts here? Anything that you would like to, anything that we're missing? Anything we should talk about?
The only thing that I want to say is that if there's anybody that's how am I going to say this now? So my kids are never going to know what it's not. My daughter's 10 years old. She has Snapchat, right?
Yeah.
And the only thing that I'm going to say is that over the last, I'm not disgruntled towards social media particularly because without it, I wouldn't be who I am. And it's offered me a lot of opportunities. And more importantly, it's given me a lot of really cool experiences of traveling around and meeting people at expos and being able to train with different people. And I'm very appreciative of that. And a lot of people will experience that through social media if they become popular. But always, I don't know, this is going to sound tacky and cliche, but just I've always stayed true to no matter who my sponsors were at the time. And I had people whispering in my ear that they wanted me to do certain things, and I never would do it. I always want, if I wasn't comfortable with it, I stayed true to who I was. Listen, my idea, I might be saying shit on this show today, and a week from now, something may happen to give me a different perspective, and I might change my mind. So we're always changing our mind. We're always evolving. But in terms of social media and the people out there, just like, stay true to who you are. I've seen so many people that like slowly but surely pick up a little bit of popularity, and you and VJ have done a really good job of not doing this.
Oh, like, thank you.
I mean, you're still the same person you were at that point. Like, you talk about being a fan all the time, still to this day. And I know VJ is, I know he hasn't changed, because he's like, he's still like a 16-year-old reading Flex magazine. You know what I mean?
He's great.
He really is. And so, like, you guys have done a really good job. And we are not famous in the grand scheme of things whatsoever, but people in our little realm know who we are, right? The problem is that in our sport, and it, even if one person hears this, and they, like, stay true to yourself, always never forget where you come from. And anytime that anything makes you feel uncomfortable and you're selling it, like selling a product that you don't really believe in or whatever the case may be, just in the long run, it's better to be true to yourself instead of, you know, it's better to be Adam McVay that, you know, he has this reputation where people don't like him, and that's okay. Like, you're not going to make everybody like you. Just stay true to yourself. Don't fall into the trap of looking a certain way or posting a certain amount of selfies just for social media and attention. Because at the end of the day, when you put that phone down and you look around, how many of those people are there? Like, none of those people are there, man. The only people that are there are your family and your friends that you've had before social media ever came into existence or before you ever had a Facebook account. And those are the people that matter. That's not the – it's fans are great. It's amazing. I appreciate everybody that follows me and reads everything I fucking say, no matter how stupid it is. And I know I put stupid shit out sometimes, and that's all fine and dandy. But at the end of the day, the people that really matter are your friends and your family. And what really matters is not what your physique looks like or what your body looks like, because eventually that's going to fall apart and it's going to die. And when you are laying on your deathbed, I just don't feel like a lot of people are going to be staring up at the ceiling thinking, man, I wish I would have trained for 2 more years, or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think they're going to be looking back, thinking about all the things that they missed out on. And I just don't want to be one of those people.
Yeah.
I don't want to be staring up at those fluorescent lights in that goddamn hospital bed, looking back at my life and saying, man, I didn't even experience what it was like to be a human, because I was in the gym lifting weights, staring in a fucking mirror for 20 years.
It's a material thing, you know, just like chasing money or trying to accumulate, you know, objects, you know, that's not happiness, right? You know, looking for things outside of ourselves.
Right. You can't take, and none of that stuff is going to make you happy. At the end of the day, there's only one thing that can make you happy, and that's you. That's it.
I like that.
That's it. So,
hey, I want to say thank you too for one other thing.
What's that?
episode 107 of Geared Up.
What did I say?
You had actually well, a couple
you're
things.
You're thanking me, so it must be a good thing.
actually two things, and one of them you didn't even know who I was at the time, but I want to say this one first. Geared Up episode number 107, you had on Mike Francois, Sasan Harati, Dave Kalik, and the Bodybuilding Nerds.
All in one show?
All in one fucking show, dude.
It's all like a blur. You know how you like, isn't it crazy how your memory works and it only picks out certain things that you really remember on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's only when somebody comes in, like even with your friends, like if you have any, I've had, my group of friends I've had over 20 years now. One of my friends I've had for 26 years this year. And he always talks about the shit that happened to us when we were kids, and I don't remember it at all. And it's just like, wow, that really happened. And like right now that, wow, all those names are badass. That's really
except
cool.
For Bodybuilding Nerds, we were maybe like 30 episodes in at the time. And man, like I said, you know, we listened to you guys every week. It was a huge thing. That meant so much to me that you guys had us on. VJ and I both really appreciated that.
And that was my idea, by the way.
Well, thank you.
And that just goes to show, man, it's like, you know, you give respect and you get respect in return. The way you treat people, like if you earn people's respect, they're going to respect you back. There's just some people out there that don't earn respect, and I just don't give it to them. So fuck those people.
And the the other thing I wanted to mention was I was on the what was it called? It became the Chris 250.
The Chris 250 MVB award.
Yeah, the MVB award. I was on that 1 week, and I took second to a guy that turned pro. You guys didn't know me at all at the time. This is before we were on the show, like months and months before that.
Okay.
Your comment, I died laughing. You didn't know that I was friends with Shelby at the time. And you said, this dude is shredded. He looks like an economy version of Shelby Starnes.
The comedy version?
Yeah.
Like a dollar store version? You're the dollar store Shelby Starnes? Like the watered down dish soap, you know?
Because I was I was peeled, dude, like lean as I possibly could on my deathbed, but I only weighed like 183 pounds. So, you know.
Remember the contest pictures of Shelby's when he first put up his first picture?
Yeah.
Or when he was like 150 pounds or whatever he was.
Oh, yeah.
He was shredded beyond belief, man, but he was so tiny. It was so funny. Yeah.
I saw him. I saw him when he was that peeled. He never got, that was, I think 2008 maybe in Central States when he was like just peeled to the bone, and he never got that quite that lean again, but he kept growing after that. So
I went to the first time I was around Shelby was when he had just switched over from the powerlifting to bodybuilding. I want to say it was like 2006, and he was helping Justin Harris out with a seminar.
No kidding.
Yeah, so me and Johnston actually drove. That's how long I was friends with Johnston before we had our falling out. Drove up to Michigan, went to this Justin Harris seminar, and Shelby was just passing out. Like at the end, he had this raffle with some elite FTS stuff, and he came out with like an amino acid product at the time, like a branched chain amino acid product.
Okay.
So he was like at the end of it, he was giving all this stuff away, and Shelby was the one that was handing it to us all. And then eventually, he became a trainer underneath Justin, et cetera, et cetera. The rest is history. But yeah. That's funny.
Okay. Man, yeah, you guys did so much, man. I mean, the Geared Up gatherings, those were awesome. Came up here to Detroit for that, so that was a lot of fun.
I did one thing that I always wanted to do, and I'll stop talking about myself like this because now I'm starting to feel – now I feel like I'm just going on and on about myself. But one thing I always maintained was that, like, it's not part of my real life. No matter how big our podcast got, like, in my everyday life, I didn't train bodybuilders in real life. I was just training regular men and women for general health, fat loss and stuff. So it wasn't part of that. I didn't really go to any local shows, so it's not like anybody was recognizing me at local shows. And my life was basically, I was just married, and I would go home and hang out with my wife, or, you know, we eventually had a kid and stuff, and it just wasn't part of my everyday life. So I was able to remain humble throughout the entire thing. Hmm. And that was one thing that I always wanted to do, was just like, I always gave, even when people came up to me at the table, I remember meeting you for the first time, or a lot of different people coming up to the table like, hey, Adam, you know, it's nice to finally meet you and blah, blah, blah. And you would act like it was this huge big deal. And I'm just like, I don't know why this guy's so fucking happy to meet me. I'm just a regular dude, man. Like, so,
I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? Right? Do you get that? You get like people coming up to you at shows or whatever, like, and know who you are, and you're just like, and it's not like it happens. It's not like I'm not a YouTube star where there's like a fucking hour-long line or whatever. Like, I think I had like a line of maybe 5 minutes at one point at one expo. You know.
Me too.
And the only reason the line even built up that long is because I tried to talk to everybody and have conversations with everyone. You know.
Right.
Yeah, so it's cool, man. I've enjoyed the popularity thing, but I'm kind of over it now, to be honest with you. And I just want to like get into some other stuff.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you do, man. I think it's going to be pretty cool. All right, let's get out of here, man.
All right.
For another episode of Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Adam McVeigh.
Thanks, man.
Advices Radio Network.